Morning. It is good to be here, and this was definitely an interesting trip, and I'm excited to be here and share some things. And I just want to thank you guys for the support that this church has given to what we're doing. You know, it's interesting because if you look at most video production companies, they go out and they raise millions of dollars through businesses and investors, and they go out and do all this stuff. Every time I go to any kind of business and say, hey, and now, you know, it's interesting because you approach a business and you say, hey, and they say, yeah, and they look and they go, oh, you're a Christian company. You know, we don't get into that and things like that. So it's awesome. This is where the support comes from, is these grassroots things like you guys. I mean, if you guys have watched The Chosen, if any of you have watched The Chosen, they are filming that whole thing through people like you. I mean, it's an amazing way that we're doing this. And I think it's neat to see the church understanding that this is the way ministry grows. In some ways, it's nice that so many businesses have been vocal against Christianity and conservative values, because I think it's showing the church that we have to support other ministries and missionaries. And so if we're going to take their evilness, we'll use it for good and say, okay, this is why we need to get behind ministry. So I'm so thankful for you guys and what you've done. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we did with some of what you gave. And I think we'll just start with that short video. Just as Pastor said, he told me on Friday. And so I kind of put this together a little quick because I have not even gotten into editing the videos yet. So this is kind of just a brief overview of kind of what we did. It was interesting. So originally I was supposed to leave and go out and be there on Friday, and we were going to start doing films on Friday out at Pine Ridge. So that was the goal, is I was going to meet with two different groups and we were going to go out there and do as many interviews as we could within the week. Well, the goal then, too, was that I was going to stay inside this church, and we were going to sleep in the church, and that was it. I got a call on Monday or Tuesday saying, hey, we can't stay in the church. The sun sets on the church. They don't have air conditioning, and it is way too hot to sleep in. There's no windows, nothing. We will be toasted if we sleep there. And I said, okay. Well, I had talked to the lady, Hope, who hosted us a few days earlier, and she told me about people who used to bring tents and camp out around the churches, and then they would have these big tent meetings. A different take on tent meetings, because people literally come and sleep in a tent for a week and then go to church. So I said, well, okay. So I called her up real quick, and I said, if I bring a tent, can I put it up in your yard? And she said, yes, you can do that. I said, okay. She goes, but we don't have running water. We don't have anything like that. So, you know, you're going to have to find a way to make that all work. I said, that's okay. And I got online, and I started buying camping equipment that I had never even knew existed. You can actually buy showers for outdoors. You hook them up to a bag, and you stand inside a little standing tent. I found all these things. I said, okay, we'll make this work and we'll do it. And so that was the plan. And she goes, the only thing is you might have to wake up to the buffalo. And I thought, well, that actually sounds adventurous, until I realized that buffalo don't really care about if your tent is strong or not, and they'll scratch themselves on it and push it over. So I thought, well, this could be very interesting, but hey, if God has opened this door, we're going to go and we're going to do what we got to do. And it was funny, because I went to somebody and I said, hey, I think, you know, we're not going to be able to stay in this building. I think we're going to have to stay in a tent. And they said, oh, I guess you're not going then. I said, no, God opened this door. We're going. I don't care if we sleep on the ground in the car or what we're doing. We're going. God opened this door. And so from the beginning, I was told it was a very interesting situation for me, because Pine Ridge is where Wounded Knee is. And Wounded Knee is a very sore subject for most Native Americans, where, you know, there was a big massacre that took place there. And it's literally 20 minutes down the road from where we did most of our services. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, they said, yeah, they're not really happy about white people coming into their area. And I said, okay. So we went in there and started planning this thing, and about a day before I was leaving, I get a phone call that says, oh, by the way, we're going to get to stay in a men's shelter that's there, that's vacated right now because of COVID. They're not letting any men stay there, and it's practically a brand new building. It has air conditioning. You'll have your own room and everything. And I thought, well, that's really neat, because what I saw God do was say, kind of, it was a test of, if you have to sleep on the ground, will you still go? And it was like, yeah, I'll still go. And I called the other guy up that I was going with, and I said, man, I got two tents now. We can put the youth group on the ground for a week. It'll be an experience for them, and we'll go. And he's like, yeah, sure, we'll do it. And I said, all right. So we were all in the same mindset that, yeah, we can sleep on the ground and do what we got to do and get in there and get it done. So it was like God saw that we were serious. We were still going to do it and said, okay, let me give you even better than what you ever thought you were going to get. And so we got almost a promotion to this beautiful place to stay. And what was really neat is that's where we did almost all the videos too. So I was able to set my equipment up there and then just leave it set all week long so that we didn't have to tear down and set up every time we turned around. Set up and tear down takes about an hour for each. So if I can leave the stuff set up, it saves me about 2 hours of work every day of not having to set up and tear down and, you know, go through all that. So it was a blessing over and over again. On top of it, the place was just, it's well taken care of. So they had all these other donations that had come in through their various things. And they're like, hey, there's some food in the fridge. If you guys need to get into it, go ahead. You know, all these things that we were kind of worried about along the way. And it was just all provided. God just took care of all of it. And so it was amazing to see. So then on Thursday, I messaged the first group that I was supposed to meet on Friday. And I said, all right, I'm getting ready to head out. And she says, oh, I'm leaving Friday. All right, it was on Wednesday I called her. And she says, well, I'm leaving Friday. I said, well, you're supposed to be here till Sunday. She says, no, I'm leaving Friday now. And she goes, I'll just leave you and then you can come in and meet everybody. And I thought, well, no, I don't go anywhere without a covering. And if my covering's leaving, I'm not going to go in and just do that, you know, whatever. So I had to have some quick prayer time and talk with my wife, and I said, I don't think we should do it. And I called up Jimmy Muskrat, who's a Cherokee guy from Oklahoma that I was going with, and he said, yeah, don't do it. If you don't have a covering, don't go. And I said, okay. So we just put off the trip, and I left a couple days later, and we got out there. Now, what's interesting, and I didn't know this, is the reservation only got addresses a few years ago. And so I was pulling in. I put on my GPS. I said, okay, we're going to Wounded Knee. That's all they kept telling me is you're going to Wounded Knee. So I put Wounded Knee in. I got into the reservation. In order to get into the reservation right now, especially as a white man, they make you sign in. They check who you are, where you're from, where you're going, and all these things about, like, you know, you got to go through a checkpoint. Do you have COVID? Have you had a COVID vaccination? All these kinds of things. So they let me in, which was a blessing because just a week or two before they had closed and they were actually in the process of talking about closing down the border again. And so they said, nope, go in. So I start going down the road and then I ended up on a 13-mile dirt road headed out to Wounded Knee. You don't know how long 13 miles is until you drive it on a dirt road and you're not really sure where you're going and there's no houses to be seen anywhere. And so we went over and we got there and I got to Wounded Knee and I called them up. I said, I'm at Wounded Knee. They said, okay, here's what you're going to do. Put in post office and drive to the post office. Okay. So I put post office in my GPS and I drive down the road. I go to the post office. I said, okay, I'm at the post office. Okay. Now you're going to come out on the road and go south and you go south for 3 miles outside of the reservation and you'll find us on the left side of the road and there's a tractor in the yard. I said, okay, you guys got to explain something. Can you give me an address? No, we don't have addresses. Just drive on out here. So I said, oh, okay, you guys are interesting already. I'm having a good time. I said, I'm glad my car had a compass in it and everything. So we got there, and it was interesting because the first couple of days, the people were kind of standoffish, especially the first day. You know, okay, here's this guy, whatever. And I did our first interview within about 2 hours of being there. We went to a church service, set everything up, and I did a video outside with the pastor. And right off the bat, we went to work 2 hours in. And he was nice. He did his interview, but he was kind of standoffish with me and everything the whole time and gave his testimony and did a great job. And, you know, that was the beginning of the whole week. And so we started doing testimonies, and we did about, I have to guess it's about 20. I haven't put them all together yet, but I believe we did about 20 interviews in the whole week. And it was amazing to see. Now, one of the things I didn't know is people tell you how poor these reservations are. And the reservations I've been to before were fairly poor, but man, this was like for me driving back into Africa. It was dogs running all over the place, you know, homeless people, begging for finances, for anything that they can get their hands on. Drugs and alcohol are definitely an issue, and depression is just running rampant. And so, you know, it was like, it was almost a culture shock, because it was literally like driving into Africa for me. And the big thing for me was the dogs, just seeing dogs running around all over the place, packs of dogs running wild. It was like, wow, this is not at all what I had expected. This is way more than anything I had ever figured I would get into. And so we got in there and we started doing these things, and we were having church meetings every night. And what Jimmy Muskrat, the Cherokee guy, has found is that if you want people to come to church, you feed them, because many of them are starved. And you can't feed them spiritually if you're not going to feed their body also, because if they're sitting there starving to death, they're not going to hear anything that you're saying anyways. And so we sat up and we're giving out food every night and doing meals, and he was cooking whatever he could. And he came with, he's self-sustaining. He raises his own funds and does it on his own. And so he pays for all the food out of his own pocket and everything. On top of it, he brought about 6 youth group kids with him, all the way up into their 20s. And they came, and he's teaching them. He's teaching them how to, and discipling them, how to be carriers of the gospel. And some of these guys are just from really bad backgrounds. The one guy was a drug addict. He got saved 6 months ago. And he is now on fire serving God and trying to preach and share the gospel and doing whatever he can. And, you know, that was the story for quite a few of them. So it was amazing to be able to spend the week with this group and get to talk with them and hear the things that they were up to. And so a couple days in, I said, hey, what are you guys doing for meals? He says, well, I'm just trying to make rice soup and stuff like that. I said, all right, here's the deal. The church gave me some money. Let's go to Sam's Club, and we're going to go get some groceries, and we'll feed everybody at least hot dogs and hamburgers and, you know, do all that kind of stuff. And I said, we're going to take care of everybody the best we can. So he said, okay. I said, all right, let's go to Sam's Club. Where's Sam's Club? An hour and a half away. I said, you guys are killing me. They said, well, the closest Walmart's only is like 50 minutes away. They said, this one's an hour and a half away. It's where Sam's is, so we can go up there. I said, okay. They said, well, Mount Rushmore's there too, so we'll go stop by Mount Rushmore. Said, all right, we'll go see Mount Rushmore. I've never seen it, and I wanted to. So we actually made it like a day trip and went up. We saw Mount Rushmore, and there's a Crazy Horse Monument that's being built, so we went and saw that too. And it was neat because then that day I was able to take the youth group out and take them for lunch and buy them lunch and feed them. And that was really neat because with the way his budget is, he feeds them bologna sandwiches the whole time. He says they need to learn how to be servants. So he feeds them bologna sandwiches and whatever, you know, and that's what they get. And so I said, okay, I'll take them out for lunch. We'll take care of it and take care of that. So it was really neat. And then we went over to Sam's, and they were like, wow, this is great, you know. So we got everything. We got soda and all this stuff so that we could go back and get. We did about 5 meals off of what we got, and it was amazing. So thank you guys for that, because that's where some of the funding went to, was able to do that kind of thing and just bless those guys. And it was one of the heaviest moments for me was one of the pastors came in, and somebody had asked him, did you eat? And he, oh, yeah, I ate. And then when it came time for mealtime, I watched him go up and just grab as many hot dogs and just pound them down as fast as he could. And it wasn't from a, oh, these are really good kind of thing. It was, you could tell he was hungry. And it was like, man, this is a whole different world. You know, it's a very different thing to be part of. And so it was neat. We had this guy who kept showing up every night. And he came in the first night and he said, I used to come here for the rehab center. But I'm out drinking now. I'm probably drunk right now, but God told me to come to service tonight, so I'm here. And he came every night. He came every night to hear the messages that were being preached. And so about the third day, Jimmy came to me and he says, hey, do you want to preach tonight? I said, well, yeah, I'd love to. He says, okay, here's the deal. You're going to preach. But just so you know, we're making history. White men aren't allowed to preach here. And I thought, wow, thanks for that. That's no pressure at all, you know. That's great. Yeah. What was neat was years ago I was with a drama team that we did racial reconciliation. We traveled around the country. And I went to the oldest black church in Philadelphia, in West Philadelphia. And they said, all right, we're going to do communion tonight. and you're going to go up there with us. I said, okay, oldest black church in America. They said, you're going to be the first white man to ever take communion in our church. By the way, you're going first. I said, oh, no. Because if you travel around to churches, you learn one thing. Every church does communion and offering different. Every church has their own way to do it. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm going to go up there and look like an idiot, and I'm going to ruin it for white people everywhere. So I said, oh, no. Thankfully, the guy stood behind me the whole time. He said, okay, this is how we do it. And he was whispering in my ear, thank you, Jesus, because I was so scared. And so here I was again being allowed to be one of the first white men, or at least one of the few white men to speak at this reservation. And they let me speak that night. And it was funny because they came up to me afterwards and they said, you realize Franklin Graham tried to get into Pine Ridge and he couldn't get in. And I thought, really? They said, yeah. They said, that's how important what we did here today was, is that that's what open doors and God's favor will do, is he will let you into places if you build the connections and you get in and you find, you know, we were talking about, Pastor and I were talking on Friday about Nehemiah, so I'll bring his sermon in, because if you look at Nehemiah goes to the king and he says, King, give me favor. And the king gives him favor and gives him open doors along the way to get to where he's trying to go. And that's exactly what I've seen with this ministry since we started 2 years ago, is God has just gone and opened up the doors along the way and just created these things. Pastor was asking me, he said, well, how did you meet this 5-0 Jimmy guy? I said, I went to Bemidji. Well, how'd you get to Bemidji? I said, I had an open door through two people I met one time in Texas on a mission trip. That's how God works. You start looking back and you say, okay, God sent me all the way to Louisiana with some South Africans that he sent me to South Africa first to meet. Then he took me to Louisiana. From Louisiana, took me to Texas where I met these two who ended up moving to Bemidji, Minnesota and got tied into a church that was related to the reservation up there. So you see, when you look back, you start to see God really is in control. We don't always feel it. We don't always understand what's going on. You know, we don't know why we go to Texas. God says, I have a reason why I'm sending you to Texas, but you won't see it until 5-10 years from now. You know, it's like, wow, that's pretty amazing when you start looking back and go, wow, look at God. He really does ordain our footsteps, and he really is in control, and he really is a light unto our path. And if we focus on that light and we stay focused, he will keep us going. But the idea is that we can't say no when something looks uncomfortable. And that was one of the things that I'm learning over and over again. Man, this looks uncomfortable, but I don't know. I was really, I said, yeah, I'll sleep in a tent. I said, do you guys have rattlesnakes? Oh, yeah, we got rattlesnakes. I said, man, you know, one of the things, too, was that we got there, and the second day I was there, we went and saw the buffalo. And I was so excited. I wanted to see the buffalo, and he was off in the distance. I said, oh, he's a pretty buffalo over there. Yay. We went to leave. The buffalo came up to the road in front of my car and was standing by the gate to get out. And, of course, I was the one in front. So I said, okay, well, I don't know what I'm doing with a buffalo, but I've worked with cows before. They're kind of a cow. So I got out and I said, hey, yeah, get out of here. And he walked away. And the whole time he just looked at me like, you know, I don't have to do this, right? And I'm like, thank you, Mr. Buffalo, for just going along and making me. And I turn around and look, and the whole van of all the other guys is sitting there looking at me, wondering if I'm going to die at the reservation on my first night. So the next day I was talking to the daughter of the lady who lives there, and I said, man, these buffalo are amazing. She goes, oh, yeah, our cars are all gouged up because they come and scratch themselves on them. And because their house is actually in the middle of the pasture. And she says, oh, yeah, they come and scratch their horns, and they rub their backs on the cars and all this stuff. She goes, our cars are all gouged up from them. And then she said something that really got my attention. She said, yeah, I woke up this morning at 5 o'clock to them pushing on the truck. I said, wait. You were sleeping in the truck at 5 o'clock this morning? She said, yeah. I said, okay. And I didn't think anything about it. I found out later she was sleeping in the truck because even though the guys were able to stay at the men's shelter, the girls were not allowed to stay there. So the girls on the team were staying at this pastor's house. Her daughter lives in the house. The pastor put her daughter out in the car for the night so that the girls could have a place to sleep. So, you know, when I come in and I start saying, hey, we need an RV, and I knew we needed an RV or some kind of camper when we first got going on this because of, like, the housing situation, I didn't realize how much we actually need to look into something like that, because I do not want to be going to places and having people put their kids out on the, you know, the pasture so that I can have a place to stay. So that is definitely something that we are looking for going forward, because it was like, wow, That's the kind of people that you're dealing with. They're so humble, they're so loving, and they will do anything for a guest when they come through. And so we had this great time, and you know, then they ended up saying, yeah, go ahead and preach. So I preached, and that guy that was standing there, it was funny, that guy that I told you about, he was drunk every night. And he was sitting there again, and I said, man, I prayed, and we were closing out the sermon, and I said, okay, I'm going to say amen. And then he just kept coming. And I looked at him, and I said, you know, this whole week has been for you. This whole week, you've been running and hiding from God. He's put a calling on your life. You know he has, and you keep trying to run from it, and you keep going back to these things, and God has told you, no, stop running. I'm here, but I can't do anything until you stop running. And so I just kind of prayed over him a little bit, and then he came up to me at the end. He says, you know, the things you said to me are the exact same things God's been saying to me in private. And so two nights later, the next night, they did the final service and did an altar call, and he came forward and got saved. And we saw a couple of salvations throughout the whole week, and that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to go in and do it. But what's really neat for me is I don't go in to preach. I did not go in there with the intent to preach. I did not go in there with the intent to go up and lead a service or do anything like that. My intent is to go in and document these testimonies so that Native Americans can share their testimonies with other Native Americans. I ask every time I go in, I say, what's the one thing you guys need from a missionary who comes into a tribal land? They said, you have to build a relationship before you can open your mouth and start preaching. And I said, wow, that's pretty impressive. They said, yeah, we don't trust anybody, especially white men. We don't trust them. And I said, well, I understand that. You've got hundreds of years of training in their culture saying, don't trust the white man. And one of the neat things was a little girl came up to me while I was there, and she started asking me questions about white people. And she said, are white people all rich? Are white people this? And I was just having a good conversation with her. I wasn't offended by it or anything. And her mom came over. She goes, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. She goes, all she knows is what she's told by her aunts and uncles who hate white men. I said, that's fine. We'll fix it. And by the end of the week, that little girl was following me around, asking me questions about all the video equipment. She was just all, like, she became my little buddy. She'd walk around with me everywhere I went. You know, and that's the kind of stuff that we're looking to do, is to kind of tear down some of these boundaries. And what's nice is because of the way I go in, I don't go in to preach. I don't go in to lead anything or anything like that. It takes away that edge of them thinking that I'm coming in with an expectation, because I come in and I say, no, just tell me your story. And they're amazed. You know, the one thing they kept telling me over and over again is, thank you for coming to share stories of hope. Because every time CNN shows up here, all they want to do is document drunk, suicidal, high Indians, and we're so sick of it. And people need to see that their stories of hope. And my biggest takeaway from this trip at all, altogether, was this. If you don't think that Jesus exists and that there's no power in the Holy Spirit, go to a reservation. And I'll tell you why, because what I saw was if I was dealing with Christian Native Americans, they had hope. They weren't anger and bitter about all the things that everybody else was about. They weren't getting drunk and high and living in depression. They've been through those things. They've all been through those things. But they found Jesus, they found their hope, and they sit there and they have a whole different attitude for life. And when I go out and talk to the non-believers and the guys who are tied into the tribal beliefs and things like that, they had a whole different outlook on life. And I thought, man, isn't that powerful? All you need to do is take a Christian Native American and a non-Christian Native American, and you can prove the power of Jesus Christ right there. And I thought, man, that is so powerful. And it was a huge testimony. So we kept doing these services the whole week, and it was neat because When you deal with Native Americans, you really want to get the elders on your side. The elders are important, and the elders basically anybody who's over a certain age, and it kind of depends on once they have grandkids, I think, is kind of when they start to move into being an elder. And so you really want to get the elders on your side, because if you can, that's where a lot of the heart comes from. And if an elder says, like this guy, everybody likes that guy. If the elder says, hate this guy, you might as well pack up and get out, because everybody's going to hate you just because the elder said to. And so we were there, and from the first day, Hope, her mother was there, grandmother, or her mother, and you know, we call her grandma. She looked at me, and she just didn't want anything to do with me. And I thought, okay, well, she was our last testimony that we did. And by the end of her giving her testimony, she said, we want you to come back. When can you come back? And I thought, man, that meant more to me than anything on the whole entire trip. When she says, you come back and you don't even need to come with 5-0. You just come on your own with your family whenever you want. And so I thought, wow, that's really neat. Because what I realized that God was doing in this trip is it wasn't even about the testimonies. It was about tearing down some of these walls that have been built up for hundreds of years. And, you know, it's amazing that God can take one person, send you into a place, and not even preach a word, but you still tear down the walls. You know, people who thought they would never be friends with a white man are, you know, they're now calling me friend. What it was funny was they kept saying, oh, here comes Doug Shaw. And the people would laugh. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. Why do they keep laughing about Doug Shaw? About halfway through the week, they explained to me that in Lakota language, Doug Shaw sounds a lot like Doug Shaw, which means later. And so they kept saying, well, here comes later. So they have a joke among the Lakota, and it says, Doug Shaw, Black Hills. So, like, if I give you $5 and you're going to pay me back, you'll say, Doug Shaw, Black Hills, I'll pay you back when we get our Black Hills back. Which they know they're never getting their Black Hills back. So it's like this sarcastic joke. So that, you know, it was this whole thing. So now they said, nope, that's now your name. And so now by the end of the week, I was known as Tokshaw. That was my new native name. And they were all running around just saying that. And that was my new given name, which after being late today to service makes sense, I guess. I was also late for breakfast on Friday too. You know, they gave me a name. I might as well wear it. But, you know, it was so neat the way this whole thing played out. And to be there and to see the heart of the people and to really just see how God moved. And he moved in such an amazing way. Now, for those of you that haven't been here before, the whole heartbeat for what we're doing is we're documenting testimonies, putting them on YouTube so that other Native Americans can find them. Now, the cool thing about this is, let's say I put it on there, right? It's on YouTube. It's tagged to the Lakota, and it's a Lakota guy giving his testimony about how Jesus has impacted his life. A Cherokee guy talking about it. An Ojibwe lady talking about how she accidentally shot her brother at a young age. And how Satan tried to tell her to commit suicide and kill herself. And yet God came through and said, no, don't do it. You know, these Lakota guys who have all been through drugs and alcohol saying, no, we found the one hope. We found the one life. You know, the Cherokee guy saying, I went to the sweat lodges and I sat in the sweat lodges. And you know what? They never changed me as a person. But the day I found Jesus Christ, my whole world changed. We put these things on YouTube, and what's neat is there's kids that are doing college reports, there's kids that are doing high school reports, and they type in that they want to see Cherokee faith, and they pull up these testimonies along the way, and they are also hearing the gospel. So it's not even just Native Americans that are hearing it, but there's Americans that are hearing it as well. And we do it kind of undercover. We say, okay, look, a lot of people have to do stories on Cherokee faith. So, okay, when we put the tags in, it says Cherokee faith. So now eventually as we grow and we grow and we grow, that more of these videos will get watched. You know, and we've got this one video that's already at 3,000 views in just a year. And, you know, it's amazing to see what God is doing and how these things are taking off. So we do this. And I went to God, and I think I've shared this with you guys before, but I just want, for some of you, I said, God, what's a good Bible verse for your testimony? Because I don't know. I don't know this. We don't talk about testimonies in church anymore. We don't talk about sharing. You know, it used to be when we had like Wednesday or Sunday night service, we'd say, hey, share a testimony. And we'd get up and there's always that one person that, you know, oh, please don't give it, because it'll be 20 minutes of thank you for something weird, you know. And then you go, okay, what was the testimony? You know, so you do that whole thing. You guys remember that? The one person who would always get up and talk for 30 minutes and you're like, you're thankful that you got up this morning. Good. You know, I was like, okay, cool. But our testimonies are powerful. And God does all sorts of things in our lives that we miss out and we don't understand what's going on. You know, yesterday my lawnmower has been down for about 2 weeks. And we have 7 acres of land where we live. We take care of these adults with special needs. So we have a big property so that they can have some freedom. And our lawnmower was down. And I thought, man, this is horrible. Well, I just found out yesterday it had leaked out all the coolant. And I just found out yesterday it actually had a fuel leak that was leaking over the motor. And had the coolant leak not been found and we took the whole engine apart, I would have had gasoline leaking all over my hot motor, you know, all this time. Isn't God kind of good that we found this part out? You know, yeah, it took a little bit of time and he did this thing, but had we not had the coolant leak, which was very obvious, I would have never found the gas leak that was leaking gasoline all over my motor. That's pretty cool. Like, God works in strange ways. And sometimes we got to look at these little headaches and understand that there's a blessing behind the headache. You know, it's, you know, oh, you know, why did I lose my keys this morning? Well, because there was a massive car accident where you normally would have been at that time. And I've seen that. I've seen that firsthand where I lost something and I was on my way out the door and it took me a couple extra minutes and I get there right on the end of a car accident that just took place. And I think, man, I would have been right there at that time. Sometimes we got to look for those things and go, wow, what is it? What is God trying to tell me? I may have shared with you guys, I had this dream one night that the lug nuts on my car came off after one had already fallen off. It had just sheared off and fallen off. And I asked the mechanic, I said, hey, I want to fix this week, but can I drive it until oh, yeah, you're fine. So I had this dream that three of the lug nuts had come off the car. Well, that's a weird dream. And so I got up in the morning and I got all of our clients in the car because we take them to day programs and I was about to drive them. And as I buckled in the last girl, I remembered that dream. And I went and looked and another lug nut had come off the car. Same tire. I was down to three instead of five. And I thought, okay, now I'm not driving this car anywhere. God gave me a dream and now I'm down to three left. Okay. I took that car in, I jacked it up and I started torquing the lug nuts and every one of them with just a little force popped off. All three of them. Boom, boom, boom. I thought, man, if I would have gotten in the car this morning and driven out of my house, we live right on a highway, I would have hit 55 and probably been in a cornfield in a short time. I thought, thank you, Jesus, for that dream. But see, these are the testimonies. These are the things that when they happen, we're supposed to tell people about it because it encourages their faith. And if you go down and you look at Revelations chapter 12, verses 10 through 11, it says, then I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, he who accuses them before our God day and night. And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony. And they did not love their life even when faced with death. You see, your testimony has the power to overcome Satan. Because there's a lot of people who run around with excuses about, oh, I can't get through this because my life is so horrible. And God says, yeah, right. Listen to this person's testimony who's already been through way worse than you, and they made it through. Your testimony has a purpose. You grandparents that are raising kids, and I know there's some of you here, I don't know who all's doing it, but I work in a school, I see it all the time, and there's a lot of grandparents who are raising kids, and there's parents who say, I can't raise my kids, and guess what? If grandparents can raise your kids, the parents can raise the kids. It's a testimony. And I know you say, oh, that's hard preaching. No, that is exactly what the thing's about. That's what our testimonies are for, is to say, yes, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard. But there's these things that we're put through. I talk to people all the time. I say, oh, my life is horrible. My mom did this and my mom did that. Do you know the number one public speaker in the United States for years was a guy named Reggie Dabbs. His mom was a prostitute. She sold her baby for $20. She got pregnant and then realized, oh, shoot, I got another kid on the table I can't feed. And so she gave her child to a teacher. And that teacher raised this kid named Reggie Dabbs, who became the number one motivational speaker in America. Travels all around the world. You take his testimony and you look at the stuff that he came from and you say, there's a testimony. No matter what you've been through, God can overcome it, but you got to let him. You got to let him move in those areas. Denny tells some of his stuff and I thought, man, those are testimonies that nobody can overcome. Because you can go and say, well, I've been through all this stuff. And then somebody goes, yeah, but God did this thing through me. Look what he can do if you just put your trust and faith in him. If you let him speak into you and put him on a corrective path. You know, God can do some crazy, amazing things, but we have to let him. Because he'll intervene in some ways. But a lot of time he says, no, you have to, you know, you hear this sometimes in sermons, people say God is a gentleman. He doesn't force his way into your life. He doesn't knock you over and do these things unless you ask him to and say, God, here, take the reins in this situation. I need you to take control. And sometimes we just sit back and we think, well, if I don't do anything, God will take control over these situations. And we go, oh, woe is me. My life is so bad. Why is my life so bad? Well, it's because you're trying to be in control of everything. And you haven't given it over to God. Or you haven't even asked him. You know, the other day I was thinking, it's interesting because a lot of times people say, oh, God, why haven't you intervened in this situation? God's like, I already gave you the tools to intervene yourself. Go do it. You know, oh, God, why doesn't my family pray? Well, when's the last time you got your family together to pray? Oh, my kids won't go to church. Why don't they go to church? Do you wake them up and drag them? Who cares if they're in their pajamas? We don't have a dress code. We don't have a dress code, right? Okay. Deodorant is appreciated. But we sit there and we say these things like, God, why don't you do? And God's saying, I'm waiting for you to do something. Faith without works is dead. You have to do stuff once in a while in order for God to move. I sat there this last trip and I said, God, we're going to do these things. I don't know how we're going to do it. We're going to go. Gas prices shot through the roof. I was paying $3.50 a gallon out there. And I thought, man, I don't know how we are going to afford this trip because I didn't have any funding for it. And people came forward with funding. And I thought, wow. But you know what's interesting is those people don't come forward with funding until you say, I'm going to step out and go anyways. I went to South Africa the first time and they called me up. They said, Doug, how are you going to get here? I said, I don't know. I don't have any money. They said, yeah, but you're supposed to be here on January. I think it was like January 9th. You're supposed to be in South Africa. I said, I know, but I have no money. But I tell you what, God will provide. And they said, well, how are you going to get here? I said, I don't know. I got half the money right now. There's cargo ships I know that leave the ports from Florida and go to Cape Town. Maybe I can get on one of those for what I have. And I was serious. I was ready to jump on a cargo ship and go. I was $300 short for the airplane ticket. And so it was on Monday, or it was on Thursday night. I was supposed to leave on Tuesday. And so I said, man, I have no money for a plane ticket, and I'm supposed to leave on Tuesday to get to South Africa. I got home. Originally, I was $500 short. I got home from work, and somebody had dropped off $100. I said, well, that's really nice. Thank you. My grandma called. Hey, I got $100 for you. $300 is all I need. I said, well, this is getting interesting. Okay, it's kind of fun to watch God work this way. So at that time, I was selling the Beloit Daily News newspapers, which I don't like the Beloit Daily News, so it was very hard to sell it. I was not a great salesperson, I can tell you. It's like, do you want this thing? I don't know. They want you to take it. So I had to go drop my orders off to my boss, and I went to this house, and he happened to be having a prayer meeting. He says, well, Doug's leaving on Tuesday. I said, yeah, hopefully. And he says, well, what's the problem? I said, well, I'm still $300 short. He said, okay, well, we want to pray for your trip. They prayed for me, and at the end of the prayer, a lady in the group says, how much are you short? I said, $300. She pulled out her checkbook and wrote a check for $300. I now had my $1,500. I was so excited. I said, God, we are going to South Africa. Went on at, this was back in 2003, 2004, back before all these price lines and everything were really out there. So we went and said, okay, plane tickets are $1,500. We're going to buy our plane ticket. Plane tickets were now $3,000 because it was too close to the day of the trip. And I thought, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? So I went to the office. I worked for Youth for Christ at the time. I said, okay, here's the deal. I'm going to go drive around to all the places and see if anybody will give me a deal on this thing. You sit here and do whatever you can do from your end. So the secretary sat there and she ended up going to something called hotwire.com. It was a brand new website. Nobody had even heard about it. It was terrifying because what you did there was you went in and bought a plane ticket, but you didn't know what it would look like until after you pay. So you go in and you say how much you want to pay, and then they would turn around and pop out a plane ticket. And hopefully it would match, but you didn't know how many stops it was. You didn't know if it was through some like cargo plane company and you were going to sit in the back, you know, you didn't know. And so I said, all right. So I went off and did my thing. And she goes, Doug, I just found a plane ticket through Hotwire. I said, well, what's Hotwire? She goes, it's some website I found. I said, well, that sounds shady. Okay. Now they're like a major company, but back then nobody had a clue who they were. And I thought, well, this sounds good. And she goes, yeah, we found a ticket for $1,500, exactly the amount that we had raised. I said, all right, let's do it. So she put in. It ended up being the best flight to this day that I've ever been on. But you see, you have to step out and do these things and say, God, I'll go. You know, there's we say in church all the time, God, send me, I'll go. God, send me, I'll go. But God says, yeah, but you have to start stepping out a little bit. It's really great to say, hey, I want to be a missionary. But if you don't ever start building connections with places overseas, you're not going to go anywhere. You're just going to sit here the whole time and say, God, I really want to go somewhere. So now Pastor sets up this thing with Pastor Nate, who I don't know. And this guy calls me up and says, hey, do you want to come speak at my church? And I said, yeah, sure, we'll do it. And what's interesting is this thing's been bumped out almost a year now, I think, since we first talked about going, because he had COVID issues, and then he ended up going overseas, and like every time we plan, this thing keeps getting bumped back. What's amazing is now I'm going in 3 weeks to what was supposed to be a Sunday service of just speaking on what we're doing, and God has turned that from, oh, by the way, you're going to have 4 interviews to do with some Sioux Native Americans that live in the area, and on top of it, a tribal group wants you to come and do a Bible study at their service. And you start to see that, yes, if you say, God, send me, I'll go, it's great, but you also have to stand up and say, yes, I'll go. When they sent me to Minnesota, or God sent me to Minnesota 2 years ago for our first trip, and I think I shared this here, he said, go to Minnesota. I said, okay, I'll go to Minnesota. I called the guy up, and it went way too easy. He said, yeah, sure, come on up whenever you want. I thought, well, God doesn't usually work this way in my life. I have to kind of fight to get things going. So I was kind of scared at the beginning, like, okay, this is too simple. And the guy says, come. I said, all right. So I called him up about a month before I was leaving. He said, just so you know, I'm going to be dead in a month, according to the doctors. I have cancer. It's killing me. I said, when in a month, I get there in a month, literally. And I'm like, all right. He says, yeah, I might be dead according to the doctors, but I'm not taking their word for anything. I'm living strong on Jesus. Jesus told me I was going to have 80-some years of life, and I'm going to see those 80-some years. I said, okay. So we packed up. I went to my wife, and I said, hey, this could get real scary because this guy says he's supposed to be dead in a month, and we're going to get there in a month, and we're taking our girls, and we're staying in his house. I said, I'm a little concerned about this because I don't know this guy or anything, and, you know, whatever. We got up there, and he was not doing well. He kind of looked like he was on death's doorstep, but he kept saying, nope, I'm not going to die. I'm not going to die. 2 years later, he's going strong. He's put on weight. He's looking healthy. He walks without any assistance. He's doing great. But, you know, he had to stand strong on his faith and say, no, God gave me a promise, and I'm going to see that promise through. And, you know, one of the things that I think we've seen this year, if I can get into this, is COVID is a disgusting thing. But a lot of us started believing lies right off the bat that it was a death sentence no matter what. And we started living in fear, and we started living in anger and bitterness, and we started living in concern, that we started pushing our friends and our family away. And we said, no, 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 we can't have time for fellowship. And we pushed that stuff away, and we started putting up walls, and we started living alone. And I was telling Pastor the other day, I said, if you look at this whole COVID thing from a spiritual warfare perspective, it was one of the most strategic attacks that we have ever seen on a spiritual level. Because what we did that was really interesting was we took a time when people needed people more than anything else. We closed the churches. We shut our doors. We kicked people out of our homes. We didn't talk to each other. And we saw depression skyrocket, suicide skyrocket. We saw all these things take off. And the reason why is because we lost our authority in Jesus Christ. We let the government become our authority. We let all these things become authorities in our life. And we forgot to rely on Jesus Christ as our authority. And I've said this here, and I'll say it again. If God wants you dead, you are dead. Your days are numbered. The Bible tells us that we have a set number of days in our life. If COVID's going to kill you, it could be a car accident. It could be anything. Your days are numbered. Our job is to live our lives to the fullest and to give glory to God every chance we can. It doesn't matter if I get COVID tomorrow and I get struck dead from it. Guess what? I'm with God. The Bible tells us to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me. I just talked to a guy yesterday. He's on death's doorstep. He's going to be 89 or 98 years old this year, and his body's just failing right and left. And so I said, can we pray for you? He said, yeah. And I prayed for him. And at the end, he says, you know, God's been good to me. He's given me a good life. I'm ready to go. He says, I don't want to go yet, but to be with him doesn't sound like a bad deal. That's true. See, we cling to life in such a way. And I guess that's one of the things, like, I talked to this one lady, and she said, you know, living in the reservation, we were always told we lived in a third world. She goes, I never knew it until I left the third world and looked back and realized what we actually were living in. She goes, I lived outside for a while and looked back. That's when I realized how bad it was. And I think what we need to do this year is now, I regretfully, I think we're headed towards lockdowns and everything again. I think they're going to try to go that route. But what we need to do is look back at this past year and say, that was our third world that we just went through. Do we really want to go back to that? Do we want that as our testimony? Because what we're going to see now is, I sat in a school office one day. A fifth grade girl came in. She had a cough. And it's a girl that I've worked with for 3 years now. And she came in, and she's a happy-go-lucky child. She's excited about life. And she looked terrified. And I said, what's wrong? And she started crying. She said, I have COVID. I'm going to die. And I said, honey, you are not going to die from COVID. There's kids all over the school have had COVID. It lasts like 3 hours and they're happy-go-lucky again. Like, come on, you're fine. But see, the problem was that all this stuff started creeping into her mind, and she started believing that as a fifth grader, this thing was going to kill her. And I thought, man, this is what we've done to our kids. We've let fear creep in. We gave authority to fear. And like I said, this was a strategic attack that I have never seen anything like before. And I don't even think going through history you could find much like it, except for maybe if you went back to the Holocaust and looked at those kinds of things and what went on there. I mean, this was a very well thought out plan from Satan. And if anything, it should show us how well he can attack. But guess what? He only has one game plan and we figured it out. So who cares? We just tell him, shut up. You're not welcome here. When my wife got COVID, and I know some of you have had COVID, so don't think this is like a thing, but my wife got COVID. We take care of three adults with special needs. We have two daughters. At that time, we were going through a lot of stuff with one of our clients. She was being hospitalized for other things. She was having breakdowns and screaming all night long and doing all sorts of things. And my wife got COVID at the same time. I mean, if you want to talk about a spiritual attack, this is how I saw this thing was spiritual, because I saw what it did in our own family. And this thing came in, and all of a sudden my wife was sick. She was sick for 2 or 3 days. We thought it was just stress-related because of everything going on. So for 2 or 3 days, we lived our life normal. She was sick and just was walking around the house. And then all of a sudden she said, I think I got to go in for a COVID test. I said, okay, we're going for a test. Came back positive. She said, I got COVID. I said, okay. And immediately I told God, I said, I don't have time for COVID. Keep it off me. I don't have time. We got to deal with all these other things with the people in the house. We got too much going on. Satan, you ain't got no place here. I'm not putting up with it. What's amazing is I didn't get sick. And like I said, we lived our life normal for 3 days. She was just walking around the house and everything. And I didn't get sick. We don't think our daughters got sick, though they did get down for a few days or for about a day, and then they were back. So we think maybe they had that child version, which kind of passes through, whatever. And none of our clients, who are all within that realm of they should have probably died if they got COVID, even came down with one symptom the whole entire time. We have to learn to take authority. Authority is ours. We were given it. When Jesus hung on the cross, he destroyed death. He destroyed sickness. He destroyed all that stuff. Said, here's the keys to hell. Go walk in and tell them to get out. And yet sometimes we forget we have that authority and we let things come into our lives. They overcame them because of the blood of the Lamb. Jesus Christ has to be first. And the word of their testimony. And when we can figure those things out, when we can understand that this is what God wants from us. The funny thing is, I didn't prepare a sermon for today. I was just going to come up and talk about what I was supposed to talk about as far as what we did. But we need to walk in authority. And a lot of people came up to me and said, you know, you as a white man, you're here on this reservation. Aren't you scared? They said a lot of white men won't come here. They're invited, but they won't come onto this property because they're scared. I said, God told me I'm supposed to go to these reservations. I'll walk in that authority. That's the authority I was given, is to walk into these reservations. I'll do that. I don't care. because that's why I was okay with sleeping on the ground, even if there was rattlesnakes. Probably, I'm dumb enough, I probably would have gone to try to catch a rattlesnake. That's kind of my thing. I like that kind of stuff. You guys, if I ever die on a ministry trip related to an animal, know that it was my fault. The animal had nothing to do with it. But that's the authority God has given us, that we can be called to do certain things. We can go into places. That doesn't mean it's all going to be rosy. Look how many people in the Bible ended up in jail. I mean, the whole book of Revelation is written for prison. There's a good chance that things aren't always going to be rosy, but the thing is, we know the authority we were given. You can still have authority in an incredibly dark place. You know, it's you carry that light. If you've ever gone into a cave and they go into the deepest, darkest part of the cave and then they always shut off the lights and they say, oh, feel your hand in front of your face, and then somebody tries to smack you while you're doing it, you know. If you've ever been there, you still have authority even in that place. And it's amazing because God does not give us a spirit of fear. That is all from Satan. Satan will creep fear into our lives. And there's places I've gone that, like when I went to India, and they said, okay, you're going to go to India, and this is a place they kill Christians. There was one day where I really started getting kind of like, well, maybe I shouldn't go. This is a dangerous place to go. I didn't tell my wife. I didn't tell my mom. I didn't tell anybody about what was actually going on over there until I came back. Because it's a place where they literally kill Christians. And I think I told you guys, when I first landed in India, they came up to me and they said, we have to take your picture. I said, why do you have to take my picture? They said, because we have to turn it over to the police department. I said, well, why? They said, well, you're not here on a ministry visa, but you're staying with a church. So what they want is a picture of you. And if they see you preaching at all, they will come and arrest you immediately, because that's not the visa that you're on. Do you want to preach tomorrow night? I said, yeah, we'll preach tomorrow night. That's fine. Because you got to go where God sends you, and you got to do it the way that he tells you to do. You walk in that authority and you say, okay, God gave me this authority. One of the coolest things is, let me see if I can grab this without giving a ton of feedback. At the end of the trip, the end of the week, they came up to me, and after the last service, they brought this blanket out. And I didn't know what they were up to. These are very popular with the Lakota. I'll show it to you. So it's beautiful, right? So they came up. They brought this blanket out. They said, Doug, come up here. And I said, okay. And I saw the blanket. I thought, oh, it's a pretty blanket. And then they wrapped it around my shoulders. And I thought, well, this is really neat. And then they called up the other two guys who were there and wrapped a blanket around them. And it was pretty powerful, but I didn't understand really what was going on. I didn't understand that two ladies come up, wrap it around you. And my friend Jimmy Muskrat came to me and he said, hey, you understand what this means, right? I said, I'm a little confused because I don't know the tradition. He goes, they brought you into the family. You're part of the family now. He goes, Doug, he's in his, I think in his 60s. He says, Doug, I've been in ministry my whole life. Been on the Lakota reservation for 10 years at a time. And I've never once seen them wrap a blanket around a white man before. We changed things this week. That's what walking in authority does. What's amazing is at that point I realized, you know, all those years ago I had been working in racial reconciliation, tearing down the walls and the divisive things that have been put up to keep us separated over the years. That really, it just comes down to culture is what it really comes down to. It has nothing to do with skin color. It's mostly culture. But we've been trained to hate other people and things like that. And so we had this ministry for 3 years or 2 years that I traveled around with speaking on it. And I thought I was kind of out of that ministry until they wrapped that blanket around me. And I realized that God was still using me for a ministry of reconciliation through this thing of testimonies that I'm still learning what God is really trying to do with this thing. I know that God's behind it because, like I said, I've never seen doors open for a ministry the way I have. You know, we went to Bemidji, Minnesota, and ended up going from there down to Oklahoma, from Oklahoma up to South Dakota, came back here. Now in just 3 weeks, I'll be heading over to Minnesota. And God is just throwing the doors wide open. And now I think we're probably looking at going down to Louisiana. There's three tribes down there that I'm connected to now that I can get into. And you see these things are just starting to open. And God is just saying, yeah, there's a thing to do here. There's something that we can get in and do. And I'm just so excited to see what God is actually doing. He's opening so many doors. and they're just flying open. Like it's, I sit there and I'm dumbfounded by what is actually going on, because it is happening way too easy. And the connections, you know, for them that bring me in, and what's neat is they come up and they ask me questions about white man, and I ask them questions about Native things, and we're doing it as a conversation, not as a I gotcha or anything, you know, kind of like that. It's just fun conversation of, you tell me about your stuff and I'll tell you about ours, you know, and it's really neat to be able to be in that place where I don't get offended when they ask me some kind of question. And the reason why is because of that ministry God had me part of all those years ago, where we went through training on how to deal with those kinds of questions. And so I'm just amazed at what God is doing here. I'm excited to see where God is going to take this. And I'm so thankful for this church and what you guys have done to be part of it. And, you know, it's amazing to see just all the things that God has done with this ministry, even the vehicle that we took out. You know, I have to do, I did about 50 miles on dirt roads this time, which I didn't know there was 50 miles of dirt road in normal areas in this country, but there is. And, you know, we did about 50 miles of dirt road driving up a hillside that was incredibly steep. And I thought, look, God even provided the right vehicle for us to be able to do these things. You know, he's been taking care of every detail. And, you know, we're looking now, if you can keep some things in prayer. We do have two major prayer needs right now. One, we do need that RV or some kind of pull behind trailer. And right now, apparently they are about as good as gold. And so there is none being, they're being sold at crazy prices right now. The other thing that we're needing now is some kind of small box trailer, so that when we do trips that we have housing, but we still need to take the equipment, then we have a place to put the equipment. So but it's neat. It's neat to see what God is doing. And like I said, if we were any kind of commercial filming company, we'd have a budget in the millions or billions, probably, with the way they're doing movies nowadays. And you know, we're doing, and it's been amazing, because God has supplied every need along the way. And you know, like, I didn't think there would be a place for me to sleep in a tent. So I call her up. Is there a place to sleep in a tent? Yeah, but you might have buffalo friends. Oh, that's okay. We'll have buffalo friends. You know, we were ready to take care of that situation too. So, you know, God's been taking care of everything along the way. So please just keep those things in prayer, and then pray for continued open doors. That's the biggest thing. We need more open doors. I'd love to see this thing go full time. And the potential is there. The potential is definitely there. The biggest hindrance then is finances. I mean, it really is. And so that's, I think over the next year, we're going to be putting together kind of an actual action plan as to how to go into this thing full time. And hopefully by next summer, maybe we can actually look at it as a full time ministry and really get going in it. Because that would be the goal, you know, is to be able to do this thing full time and get out. But again, I'm just so thankful for Pastor and, the way that you guys have gotten behind this ministry. You know, if you look even in the Bible, there's times where the writers say, I'm so thankful for those of you who have been behind our ministry. And it means a lot when you're in ministry to have a church, even if it's 20 bucks a month, a church that gives 20 bucks a month, it's a huge encouragement. And I don't think that churches understand it. I have a church that has 5 people in it on average. And they send me a monthly pledge of 20 bucks. And they're always apologizing. I wish we could do more. I said, you don't understand that. 20 bucks is not $20. I could care less about the $20. It's the encouragement behind that $20. It has nothing to do with the cash at the end of the day. Money's money. God can provide money from anything. But knowing that somebody cares enough that they're behind it on that kind of level. And the way that you guys have gotten behind this ministry, it just blows my mind. When God told me to come here, was it a year ago now? Yeah, it was, because I was getting ready to head out to Oklahoma. So, yeah, it was almost a year ago now. You know, when God said, hey, you need to go see Pastor Tim, I said, no, he doesn't return my calls. I don't want to go see him. And then my wife, you know what God does with wives? I said, no, I don't think I'm going to go over there. My wife says, you need to go over to that church. You keep saying you want to go. I said, yeah, but he doesn't return my calls. I don't want to go. No, it had nothing to do with that. I just said, well, yeah, I know, but we just don't have time. She says, no, you're going this week. And I said, okay, thanks. You know, and pull up here and Right off the bat, this church has supported me from day one, and I'm just so thankful for you guys and everything. So I just want to pray, and I'll turn it back over to Pastor Tim because he's got another three-hour sermon to give. So, and I do apologize because I am going to be gone for 3 weeks. I preach this week. Pastor Nate's going to be here next week. And if you don't know Pastor Nate, I don't know Pastor Nate, but I've talked to him on the phone a few times. He seems like an awesome, energetic guy. I think it's going to be an awesome time, so make sure you're here. But that also means that Pastor Tim now has 2 weeks to prepare for the next month's sermons. So if your sermons go for an hour and a half for the next couple of weeks, don't look at me. I wasn't supposed to be here. It's Pastor Nate's fault. So hold him accountable next week. But I'm so thankful. So God, thank you so much for this ministry. And I thank you for this, the heartbeat that we don't find often in churches of understanding the need of ministries. And this church has it, God. And so I just thank you for this. I thank you for the doors that you've opened for this ministry. For us to go to these Native American villages, God, and I thank you that this church is part of it. I thank you that it's part. So, God, I pray a blessing on this ministry for the fact that they have given so much to what you have called many people to do, not just me, but they have given so much to so many ministries and been so supportive. And that encouragement goes so far. So, God, I pray a blessing here. God, I pray a blessing of encouragement for this ministry, for its leadership. God, I pray that you will help them see things that they're questioning right now. If there's things that need to be discovered or figured out, God, I pray right now for that understanding, for those things to be covered, God, that you will speak into their lives and give them direction, that you will bring people that have answers to things that they have questions about. For Pastor Tim and the leadership team, God, if there's something that they are working on and trying to find direction, God, I pray that you will send the right people to help them with those things. God, we pray that you just bless this ministry. And God, I thank you for every single person that is here today. And I just pray that something that was said today ministers to each and every one of them. In Jesus' name, amen.